to take one final opportunity to thank not only our sponsors, who we've already mentioned each by name, but also to thank our hosts, Rob and Aviva Shore. This is the fourth year of the shul having a sukkahs, and other than Corona, we've had where we had to do this by Zoom. But for three of those 4 years, we've always been hosted by them, and we give them a bracha. They should continue to open up their home, both their diras keva and their diras arai, for Torah and for chesed and ma'asim tovim. And we thank you very, very much as always. Halavai, halavai. Okay, all right. Anyway, I wanted to speak about a topic which, luckily, has nothing to do with either of the two speakers who came before me, and that is the role of friendship. I was thinking about what would be an appropriate topic, and obviously Talmud Torah, people staying up late, coming together for Shiurim on a Matzah Shabbos, and I do want to focus a lot on learning and religious growth, but specifically I was thinking that one of the things that's been so beautiful, I think it's true every year, but I don't know, each year as I go through it, I feel like each year it's even more and more beautiful, the fact that we have such a beautiful community. They can come together, the people who live in the area, the people who daven at the shul, the broader community, and they're, you know, it's nothing less than, in many cases, old friendships, but even more beautifully, there's so many new friendships that are blossoming and flourishing in a religious context. It's not people you happen to randomly meet at the gym, or happen to have the same job as them, or you happen to once, but people who are meeting in a context of a shul and a shiurim and programming, and even when the program or the conversation is not explicitly about a religious topic, but the backdrop of all the relationships that we've created through a context of a shul is a certain religious motif. And therefore, I thought it would be a really appropriate topic to consider for a moment, what is the Torah perspective on the importance of friendship, on social relations, and specifically, what role does the Torah see friends having in each of our, respectively, individual religious growth and development? And I wasn't sure how I could bridge that necessarily per se with Torah. And then, Baruch Hashem, I forget lots of things, but my computer hard drive doesn't. And now with the cloud, I think I'm safe. But I don't remember ever having seen this, but it's in my notes, so I guess I once did. There's a fascinating insight of Rav Baruch Halevi Epstein, who's most well known as the Torah Temima, but he also has Svarim on other topics, not on Chumash, under the title of the Baruch Shamar. And he has a book, Baruch Shamar, on Pirkei Avos. And on the famous Mishnah in Perek Aleph about Knei Lecha Chaver, which everyone asks, it's a weird phraseology, the syntax of the Mishnah is weird. If the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos wants to tell us it's important to have friends, so why does it use a term which we usually associate with business or commerce? It sounds like the Mishnah is saying you should buy your friends. And I know people who have such relationships where they're looking to always buy friends. But that can't be what the Mishnah really means. So therefore there's many different interpretations. And the Baruch Shamar, Rav Baruch Levi Epstein, he actually suggests that the reason the term kenei is used is because it's hinting at or foreshadowing a brisa which was appended and became part of what's known as the sixth perek of Pirkei Avos. And if you go a few of the Mishnayos, or technically brisos, into that sixth perek, you have a very famous statement of Chazal that there are 48 kinyanei Torah. There are 48 ways to be kone, to acquire Torah, to master Torah, not to be just someone who dabbles in it. It's not just, you know, some people, you know, they have their weekly tennis match, and if something else comes up, so then they'll miss it. Right? That's not having a kinyan in Torah. This is something that becomes an anchor in one's life, the prime definition that gives meaning to a person's life, master to some level, to be masterful, or to master the content of Torah. So the Mishnah there describes 48 things that you need, 48 memches kinyanei Torah. And sure enough, one of them is friendship. Friends. So says the Baruch Shamar, that's what says Kinei Lecha Chaver. It's hinting at the fact that what is the ultimate purpose of having a good friend? It will help you in your religious growth. It will help you become a more connected person, a committed person to Torah, more masterful Torah scholar. And therefore, he actually bridges these two ideas. What's in Perek Aleph of Avos and in Perek Vav, the first and the last chapters of Perek Vav, respectively, the role of friendship specifically when it comes to learning. Now, I should point out, for those of you who are Bekiyim in Pirkei Avos, you may recall that depending on which of the versions of Pirkei Avos you open, the list of the 48 Kinyanim, when it discusses friendship, There are two different terms that are used. It really just depends on which perikavos you have. Most editions say diktuk chaverim, which is really confusing, actually. Ladakteik means to be exacting, to be really precise. So it sounds like, you know, before you even look at any mefarshim, it sounds like perikavos is giving us some very good advice in general, let alone for our learning, which is pick your friends wisely. Be medakteik in your chaverim. But there's an alternative version, which many other girsaot have, which is dibuk chaverim. Hold your friends close. Cleave to them. Be close to them. And hopefully, I'm not sure if we'll have the time, but there's I think, a way to describe different nuances of friendship that may relate to the two different terms. But at least for most, maybe we'll, if we have time, I'll discuss it at the end of this year. But for most of this year, we'll use the terms synonymously. And we're basically just describing or trying to explore and understand how do Chazal understand the value of friendship. And I want to start more narrowly and then branch out more widely. More narrowly, how do Chazal understand the role of friendship in a religious Torah study context? Why is it so important to have friends in that part of our life? And then more broadly, the role of friendship. So, if we had more time, I'd make this a little bit more interactive. Because I would be curious what people's natural instincts are.
Chaver tov, no?
What about... What does that mean?
There's one canon that says that what a person's goal is, chaver
tov. Oh, yeah, okay. That's also in Pirkei Avos, correct. Anyway, but I wanted to ask a different question, which is, what is... Please come on in. There are seats here. Take some of those cups off, please. Question is, what role... Again, we see this even without the Baruch Shemar bridging Pirkei Aleph to Pirkei Vav, Pirkei Avos. But you open up Pirkei Avos, Pirkei Vav, you say there's a program, a list of 48 things you need to do to become a Torah scholar, and friendship's on the list. Why? What role does friendship have in our religious life, generally and specifically in our Torah study? In what way can that be better? So, interestingly, Chazal themselves, way before you get to the Mefarshim, Chazal themselves address this both in a Gemara Masechta Tainis on Dav Zayin, as well as in a Medrash. If you look at the Gemara in Tainis on Dav Zayin Amud Aleph, the Gemara has a few different interpretations, but I would like to suggest that they're really all one. The first thing the Gemara mentions, based on a pasuk in Mishlei, Barzel Bibarzel Yachad, that having a good friend who you can talk about life with, the deep issues, discuss Torah with, that's comparable to the way you sharpen iron. Right? You take two pieces of iron, two swords, two knives, and you rub them against each other, you bang them against each other to sharpen each of them. Says the Gemara, Mar Barzel ze echad mechadet et chavero, av shnei tamid chachamim mechadedin ze et ze bahalacha. Right, there's only so much mastery you can have on your own, but if you have to contend with other people's opinions, right, we know this in other areas of life. Right, a lot of people live in bubbles, a lot of people live in echo chambers. And then when they step out of their bubble, they have to confront an opinion that doesn't always reinforce their assumptions, their priors, and their biases. Often they crumble, because until then it was just the echo chamber, which was really weakening them, even though they thought it was reinforcing their, but it was really weakening them each time they just reinforced them. So says the Gemara, no, you should deal with people who are going to question your assumptions, who are going to sharpen your thinking, and the end result will be better. That's one opinion. A second opinion compares having a good friend or a chavrusa not to iron, but to fire. Again, based on a pasuk in the Navi Yirmiyahu, Ma'esh enu dolek yachid, af divrei Torah enu mitkaimin biyachidi. Now it's not clear why, but at least here, points out, you need something to ignite something else. Right? The Gemara is not holding by spontaneous combustion. Right? You need something that created the fire, which can then light something else. So too, in Torah, you need people to come together or you won't be able to sustain or maintain the fire. The last opinion in the Gemara, which is also very, very telling, the Gemara compares this to or really reinterprets a pasuk in the Navi Yirmiyahu in Perek Nun of Cherev al Abadim. Right, which really, I think, literally would be translated as there would be a sword that would be brought against the imposters of Israel. But the Gemara reinterprets badim milashon levad, or badad, to be alone. And if you're alone, meaning you're trying to work on yourself religiously, you're trying to grow in Torah religiously, or scholarly, academically, but without charusas, without friends, so then you have this sword, so to speak, almost of Damocles, if you will, hanging over your head. Cherev al sonem shaldin mechachamim sh'oskin bad b'torah. If they're by themselves, right, they're running the risk, right? Maybe he's a brilliant person, but maybe he's not going to realize his own mistake, Right? Again, it's in the world of science, sometimes this happens. Right? That's where the whole process of peer review eventually emerged from. Right? Scientists can be very competitive. They often want to do the research alone. They don't want anyone else to know, because then someone could steal their idea and get their patent or get their tenure or whatever the case may be. But sometimes, if you made a mistake early in the process and you didn't know it, you could go on make all sorts of assumptions based on a flaw that if you would share it, or eventually you have to share it, you have to get it peer reviewed, then maybe you'll get caught. So says the Gemara, you basically have this, you know, sword hanging over your head. You can any minute make a mistake, and not only that, it's really going to make you more foolish. Lo od ela shemetapshin, lo od ela shechotin. Right? Either I'm not sure which one's worse. You'll just make mistakes in learning. You'll be, in that sense, stupid. That's the lashon of the Gemara. Forgive me. Or you'll maybe even worse. You'll actually sin. You'll lead to erroneous conclusions. Now, before I summarize why I think these are really all three approaches are really one, I just mentioned there's another interpretation in the Medrash in Koheles Rabbah, which says very famously on the pasuk of Tovim Hashnayim Min Echad. Why is two better than one? So says the Medrash, Tovim Hashnayim Shem Yegiin B'Torah. The Medrash specifically understands that pasuk, that it's specifically talking about friends in a religious context. Why so? Because Ki Im Yipol HaEchad Yakim Es Chavero Shem Shaka Halacha Echad Mehem Chavero Machzir HaHalacha. So he specifically, the Medrash here specifically focuses on forgetfulness. Right? Some people are blessed with incredible memories. Right? I'm sure some of you even may know literature on this, but I once read some secondary literature on this. You know, in history, the number of people who literally had a photographic memory is infinitesimally small, if ever. But there are people who have what appears to be near photographic memories. That is not very common, that's why we're impressed with it, but it's not unheard of. And then there are other people who just have much better memories than I do, which is how everyone defines a person has a good memory. If they have a better memory than me, then they must have a good memory. So we've all known people at work, and sometimes there are relatives, different members of the family, right? Have very good memories. So in that specific context, says the Medrash, if you're by yourself, it's inevitable you're going to forget things. But if you have friends, people you talk about things with, right? So tomorrow, you're going to be thinking to yourself, wow, but golly, he gave an amazing shiur. You are going to think that, right? You're going to be thinking that. But then you'll be, but I can't remember. What did he say? What was that point from the Medrash? So if you don't have any friends, I think you all have friends, but just in case. Now, but if you didn't have any friends, you didn't want to be talked to, so how are you going to reclaim that lost knowledge? But if you have someone else that you're friends with who's at the shiur, you'll just ask the person, and they'll remind you. Now, I think all four of these are basically all one, in which Chazal are taking a very practical or pragmatic approach. Whether it's for forgetfulness, sharpening, it all comes down to the same thing, which is human beings are finite, human beings are not remotely perfect, we have our chisronot, all of us, some of us are a little smarter, some of us a little better memories, but none of us are perfect, and none of us are intellectually completely mushlam, and therefore, it's going to be just, it's just smart, it's pragmatic, to have chavrusas, to have friends, to have people you talk about things with, so that you can, so to speak, be lifted up on a practical level. I will note, I don't think it's a contradiction, but it's fascinating to me and that the Maharal takes a completely different approach. The Maharal, in his commentary to Perkei Avos, Derech Chaim, in many different places when he's talking about Torah in Perkei Avos, he notes, and this is only one example, but there are many of the different statements of Chazal in Perkei Avos and in general, but specifically in Perkei Avos, which speak about Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, or good midos, or chesed, or all sorts of things like that, including in our case specifically friendship, as somehow contributing to learning prowess and success. And the implicit question, which is the one we asked explicitly at the outset of the shiur, which is, what does one thing have to do with the other? You could say it's good to have a friend, and you could say it's good to learn Torah, but why are they necessarily connected? Yet Chazal repeatedly make these connections. So the Maharal has a theory. He has one theory which is super duper Maharalian, and metaphysical, and we don't have time, I won't mention that one. But the one he mentions even more often, I think, is actually, I wouldn't call it logical, it's more of just an axiomatic statement that he makes, but I think it's very, very powerful. And other thinkers say this as well, but he really hammers this many, many times. Says the Maharal, the Torah was not given to any individual Jew. The Torah was not given to you, the Torah wasn't given to you, the Torah wasn't given to you, the Torah wasn't given to me. Not at all. The Torah was given to Klal Yisrael, to the Jewish people. It was not given to a single individual Jew at any point in history. It was given to the Jewish people as a corporate entity, as a unit. And therefore, says the Maharal, explaining in various different permutations, But all of them, he comes to the same conclusion, which is the only way a person has a fighting chance to connect with Torah, to really master Torah, to be worthy of the Nosten HaTorah, gifting you Torah, is if a person is part of Klal Yisrael. And not just in the technical halachic sense, well, if your mother's a Jew, therefore you're a Jew, but more emotionally, psychologically, ideologically, you see yourself as part of the Jewish people. You contribute to the Jewish people. You cry with the Jewish people. You celebrate with the Jewish people. You do chesed to your fellow Jew because you know that every one of them is your brother and your sister. That connection, that feeling part of Am Yisrael, is not, you know, there's five or six other reasons why we might think that's a good thing. The Maharal says, in addition to all those, it's also the only chance you have to connect to Torah. Because if you're not part of the Jewish people in every deep sense, Hashem's not interested in giving you the Torah. Hashem wasn't interested in giving anyone the Torah. He wasn't interested in giving the Jewish people the Torah. So in that sense, if we take the Maharal's approach, so there it's not just a practical reason why it's good to have friends that'll help you with your Torah, but it's in fact a more fundamental way by being part of a social unit and endeavor. You know, there's the Klal Yisrael and master, you know, the meta level, then there's all the mini chevras, you and your chavrusa, you and your friends, you and the people you go to a shir with, the people you go to a shul with, your neighbors, all those little mini circles are all microcosms of Am Yisrael, and therefore to connect with them, to be part of them, is not only practically a good thing, but is actually very fundamentally a necessary prerequisite, according to the Maharal, to connecting to Torah. Now all of this, I think, is fine and good and interesting, but it's clearly insufficient, at least in one sense. Because as many of you know, and you're probably all waiting for me to get to this, I didn't even mention the most extreme statement that the Gemara makes in connection to friendship and Torah, which is not only the Gemara's statement, but it's in the same context, of O Chavrusa, O Misusa. If I don't have a Chavrusa, then you know death is better. But more than that, the Gemara describes how important it is, how much you can learn from your Rebbeim, and says the Gemara in Masechta Tainis, Umechaveirai, Yoser Mirabosai. Now the Gemara also says, right, Mitamida Yoser Mikulam. That's not our topic tonight. But says the Gemara, you can learn more from your friends than from your teachers. Now this is a Pella. It's one thing to say it's good to have friends, it's good to have good friends, it's good to have a Chavrusa. Not, you know, those things are all not implausible. We spent 10 minutes explaining what some of the deeper reasons why that may be true. But how could that be better than being the student of a master teacher? You're not going to tell me that the Gemara was only talking about some of the teachers I had in high school. Right? That was for sure true. Playing ball was better than being sheer at certain points. At least that wasn't having a negative impact. But if a person is Zocha, and there are so many, especially in our door, there's so many wonderful rabbis, so many wonderful rabbis, teachers, female teachers, male teachers, so many wonderful teachers. Is Zocha in person to be connected through the various platforms on the internet to listen to Shurim and download and podcast? And you have, you know, and there are a lot of great ones out there. So it's good that I have a nice chavrusa. It's good that I have some friends that I like to talk to after davening, of course, from the shul about Torah and learning and things like that. How could that be Yoser Mirabosai? How could that be more than my teacher? A very powerful question, a very fascinating idea. So I want to share with you very quickly one or two different of the interpretations that are given, specifically in the context of Pirkei Avos, Lama Farshim Pirkei Avos, on these Mishnayos reference that Gemara, and they wonder what's going on. And it's going even further than anything Pirkei Avos said. And then we'll try to wrap it up by discussing the role of friendship more generally. One suggestion that is made by both Reb Chaim Volozhiner and his commentary to Pirkei Avos, Ruach Chaim, as well as the Medrash Shmuel. The Medrash Shmuel is a sefer on Pirkei Avos, which was written by one of the great Sfardi Chachamim, who was part of that Chabura, that base Medrash of Rav Yosef Karo in Tzvat, who was a contemporary. And he wrote what basically would be called a Shita Mekubetzas on Pirkei Avos. He collects many other, he has his own opinions too, but he collects other people's, and it's all from that same generation, and it's often people that if you weren't holding exactly in who are, you know, 15th century, you know, Sephardi scholars, you might not have heard of. But the Medrash Shmuel is a classic studied by anyone who studies Pirkei Avos seriously. And both the Medrash Shmuel and Reb Chaim Volozhiner say that, ironically, the weakness of friendship in the learning context is its strength. That is to say, it requires more of us when we're learning with a friend than when we're sitting at the feet of a master teacher. The very fact that our friends don't know as much, the very fact that our friends don't have enough mastery of the material, they can be so clear, requires us to be, have what we would now call in the 21st century, active learners. Chaim Voloshin of the Medrash Shul didn't know that term yet, but that's what they are foreshadowing. That active learning is the highest form of learning. And if you, there's a lot of my list having a great teacher, but the chisaron is, you don't have to do anything. I was never, very short period of time, was in Rav Shechter Shir, but really never in a Shir, and I was never in any official way when I was a Talmud, or Rabbi Yonasan Sachs a Shir. But they had both shared the same common denominator, which is that they knew everything, unbelievably clear, and people loved their shurim. But their shurim, it was well known, were an Achilles heel, because they were so clear and so masterfully delivered that you didn't really need to spend the 3 hours in the morning preparing to understand shir, because you would understand it anyway. I'm not saying that Chassam was a criticism, but it's a perfect example of exactly what Rav Chaim Voloshiner and the Medrash Shmuel are saying, that the more masterful the teacher, the more, you know, the material is so, you know, chad v'chalak, just presented so beautifully, you just sit there the whole time and enjoy. But again, whatever, and I'll leave it to Rabbi Klammer or the other experts in education to explain what's exactly going on, neuropsychologically, of why when we're just passively listening, I'm not talking about who's daydreaming, we're just listening, but listening in a more passive way, it does not sink in as much, it's not collate as much as a person has to be an active learner. And says Chaim Voloshiner, if you're dealing with a friend, so then you're going to have to be more active, dafka, because the friend is less masterful and less scholarly. Very, very interesting idea. Rav Yonis and Eibeshitz has a commentary on Perkei Avos as well, and he suggests something very, very interesting. He suggests that it's not so much that the teacher is so clear, therefore you'll be passive. He says something that many of us have experienced, which is that very often when we don't understand something in Shir, we're too embarrassed to ask. Right? Because you don't want the Rebbe, the teacher, the Mora, the Mechanechet, to realize that maybe you're not as smart as you think that they think you are. Whereas with your friend and your Chavrusa, so there, that's much more low-key, that's much more intimate. Right? They already know who you are and who you aren't. And therefore, when you don't understand something, no one ever in a Chavrusa didn't ask, what did you say? Can we read that again? I didn't understand. I'm embarrassed to ask that to my Chavrusa. That'd be the sign that you have a wrong Chavrusa. That'd be weird. But in a Shir, even a Shir in which there is a culture of question and answers, very often people hold their tongue because they don't want to look bad. So he says also, again, the strength of the Rebbe can sometimes also be its weakness. So there's a few other interpretations as well, but it's striking to me that all of them, again, this is, if you're talking about Chazal and even Mefarshim along the centuries, really all predating and foreshadowing what is, I think, a relatively more recent educational insight, and that is the superiority of active learning. And pretty much all the different Mefarshim who try to understand why Mechaveirai Yosar Mirabosai, pretty much all are different points around the same circle of that with contemporaries, we're more engaged and we are more active. If I had time, and I don't, I would address the question, which I think is a reasonable one, which is, what if I know myself? And I know I learn better alone. Chazal say, Charusu Amisusa. But I'm sure many of us know not only about ourselves, we've all been in yeshivas in which there were great rabbanim who learned on their own. Like, when's the last time, whichever yeshiva you're in, think of your rabbi or your Rosh Yeshiva, when's the last time he was learning b'chavrusa regularly? Now, in certain yeshivas, it's a very beautiful thing. Not in yeshivas I was really ever Talmud in, but I know there are certain yeshivas in which there's like a minhag, a mesora, where like the Rosh Yeshiva or the Rebbeim learn b'chavrusa, even in morning seder sometimes, with one of the guys, or have a chavrusa who helps them prepare shir. Okay, but that's not typical at all. Right? And even if you're not a big rabbi or something, right? A lot of people just enjoy learning on their own. So is that all bad? Is that contrary to everything we've said until now? So I think the answer is no, but we'll have to come back another time to discuss that. I just have a few more minutes left, and I wanted to now, if you will, broaden the conversation. Until now, we've specifically focused on religious growth, and specifically, even more narrowly, on learning. Which again is what we're doing. We're coming together as a group, as a chevra, as a chabura, as a shul, as a community, to learn together. And now we saw at various points why that's important, why there are certain advantages to that, etc., etc. But there are also statements in Chazal which, in general, describe the importance of friendship without making reference specifically to learning. And I think those really highlight other dimensions of the role of socialization and the importance of friendship, again, not just in a random sense, but friendship for a religious-minded person for whom, and I hope this is true about all of us, even when we're not actively doing the mitzvah, we're not actively shaking the lulav or davening mincha, but as religious people, so it's never too far from our consciousness, is our relationship with Hashem and our religious development. And if friendship is going to have a central role and a necessary role, not only psychologically and emotionally, but even evidently, from a text-based question perspective, a religious benefit, presumably there must be a more broad benefit to friendship. And therefore, I wanted to make the following point. I think nowadays, you know, I, at this point, I see this not only as a Rebbe, but I'll see this as a father. If I would have asked people, again, especially at the beginning of this year, why is it so important to be medaktik b'chaverim? That was the Lashon of Pirkei Avos, or medabek, dibuk chaverim. So most of us, you know, I think intuitively, we're very sensitive to this already, probably in my generation, let alone my children's generation. And that is, we would say, the big two words, peer pressure. Right? Nothing to do with everything we spent the first 20 minutes of this year talking about. That all might be fine and good. But that's not the real reason you want your kids to have good friends. And again, part of it's a generational thing. You know, my generation, and certainly the generation or two before me, you know, you'd pick yeshivas based on where you thought the best rebbeim were. Who had the best Rosh Hashiva? Who had the best Magid Shir? I once heard Rabbi Menachem Gnack talk about, you know, he's obviously a generation before me, but Gnack talked about how in his generation, you know, that would be the Shprach. That's what everyone was arguing about. And Ponovich, they said, oh, Rosh Morozovsky, he's the best Rosh Hashiva. And Meir was Rav Nachum Partzavitz. And in Lakewood, they said it was Rav Aaron Cutler. And in YU, they said it was the Rav. And this is, he said, you would see people here from other yeshivas, and that's what would be anime. That was the Labadik discussions in those days. And when people would make decisions about where to learn, they would do that. It's much, much less frequent now. I think even in our world, but especially in the Haredi world, as guys get older, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. It happened to be in a shir, where the yeshiva, where there's a good Rosh Shiva, may go to the shir. But no one nowadays picks yeshivas based on that. They all want to know, where's the chevra? Where can I get the best chevra? Where's the chavrusa? Everything. Now's not the time. I want to get on my soapbox. I'm ready. I've stretched, even I can make the leap onto my soapbox, but I'm not going to do it. There's a lot to say, both pro and con, about that, but it's really a noticeable shift. It wasn't always the case, but it clearly, clearly is the case now. But even if, and as you can tell, I'm not being that, I don't have such a good poker face, even though I think that it has gotten a little bit exaggerated, maybe it goes too far nowadays, but there's certainly elements of truth to it. There's a reason it's become such a powerful force, because we see with our own eyes how much a difference it makes. When our kids have the right friends, they're more likely to do the right things. And when they don't, they're less likely. It's true, and we all know this from ourselves, let alone our children, some people by nature are a little bit more independent. They're more of the leader type. Some people by nature are completely dependent and more of the follower type. On the range of 0 to 100, there's probably no one who's a 0, and there's nobody, despite what people will tell you, you know, I don't care what anyone says, I do what I think is right. Maybe 90% of the time. 85. No one's 100. Everyone cares to some extent. Everyone's influenced some. We're all somewhere on that range. And the truth is, again, it might be emphasized more in our generation. It may even be exaggerated too much in our generation. But it's not a new insight. The Rambam said it. The Rambam says this in the beginning of the 6th chapter, Perek Vav, of Hilchos Deos. The Rambam says, Derech Brioso Shel Adam. This is the way people are. This is hardwired in. You can't change it. This is what it means to be a human being. Lios nimshach b'deosav u'b'ma'asav achar reyav v'chaverav. People are most likely going to act and think in a way of the people that they are hanging out with. V'nohe k'minag anshe medinaso. And therefore, says the Rambam, very practically, he's not just speaking philosophically, he says, L'fichach, trach odem l'hischaber l'tzadikim, u'l'yeshev etzel chachamim tamid, k'desh yilmod mima'aseihem, v'yisrachach min ha'rishoyim, ha'ochim b'choshech, k'desh lo yilmod mima'aseihem. The Rambam is not speaking about some principled, theoretical benefit of being near tzadikim, or a principled or theoretical reason why you shouldn't be near rishoyim. He's speaking completely pragmatically. If you hang out with good people, you're most likely going to be a good person yourself. And if you hang out with not such good people, it's going to be much less likely that you can, you know, so to speak, escape the clutches of their influence, which may not even be intentional. Again, sometimes it is. We all know there are certain people who are domineering and they want the whole chevra to follow them and they try to push their opinions. But even if it's not that, it could just be more subtle and insidious. Just the more you're around people, you know, just coincidentally, I happen to agree with all my friends. Coincidentally, everyone who goes to that yeshiva all happens to think, you know, X or Y. It's obviously not a coincidence. Because we really are all influenced in that way. And therefore, Seth Rambam, it's so, so important to choose your friends wisely. Nothing to do with learning per se. It's a broader point. And this brings us to another Rambam. If my wife were here, she would laugh because she jokes that I always quote this Rambam. Which I don't, but I often quote this Rambam because it is a very powerful Rambam. And that is the Rambam in his commentary to the mission of Pirkei Avos that we began the whole shir with. Kenei Lecha Chaver. The Rambam there really basically adopts and adapts from Greek philosophy before him. About the Rambam says famously are three levels of friendship. Says the Rambam, the bottom, the lowest level, which is not bad, it's just the lowest level, is the relationships we have with other people, which are based on the pragmatic utility and the benefits that we give each other. But he's not talking about it. I always emphasize this because I think it can be misread and misunderstood. He's not talking about a relationship in which a person uses somebody else, let alone abuses that other person, right? If you pretend that you really like him or her, but you're really doing it because you want to, you know, be able to copy their notes, you know, before the final, or you want them to study with you, okay, that's not what the Rambam is describing. But in many involvements that we have, not even ones that we always call friends, but sometimes there might even be ones that we call friends, right? You have a study partner, or for that matter, your relationship with the electrician. I hope every time that electrician comes, you're nice, you're friendly, and over the years, you might even develop a quasi-friendship. But the whole friendship, the whole relationship is premised on you have something that he wants and he has something that you want. So that's wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. But clearly that's the lowest level of human interactions where we each benefit each other. Social contract makes the world go round. Says Rambam, there's a second level. And that is one where it's not just a pragmatic benefit to have that relationship with the person, but there is an emotional connection. We feel close to that person. It's a type of person when we have something really good, Baruch Hashem, happen in our lives. When we're younger and we have children, we get older and our children get engaged or get married, etc. Right? These are the people for whom, when they're there, the simcha flourishes. And if they wouldn't be there, it just wouldn't be the same. And it's those very same people when Rachman al-Aslan Nebuch, we can't always avoid the raindrops in life. When we go through difficult times, they're bearable because we have these people in our life. Right? And clearly that's not the electrician as much as I like him or her. Right? It's a people who we've already developed a much deeper relationship with. We have an emotional connection. Says Rambam, that's a second and higher level. But it's not the highest level. Says Rambam, the highest level of friendship is when the two people involved share a common goal. Now, it's not mutually exclusive. You also could benefit each other. This person is the more of the planner. This person is more of the implementer. It could be all sorts of pragmatic benefits that you give each other. You could also like each other, have an emotional connection. But you also have, and most importantly, what you have is a common goal. If you have something above both of you that you're both committed to, so the fact that you have something even beyond both of you which you're committed to, you transcend the limits of either of you. You're part of something bigger than either of the two of you are. Now, quite obviously, this is what we hope should describe every marriage. Right? There are benefits that we each provide each other. Hopefully there's the emotional connection. But the deepest and most meaningful relationships in marriages are when it's not just two people who enjoy each other's company, who are attracted to each other, or who each do, you know, I'm really good at the cooking, you're really good at the cleaning. You know, again, you need those things for people just to get through the week. But that's not a marriage make. The ultimate ideal marriage, which hopefully we all are blessed with, is when you share certain common goals and values. The ultimate being the children that you produce together, hopefully, right? But it's, you know, when you share not only the children, but what you dream and hope for from the children together. So that is something that's beyond either of you. Says Rambam, that not only that, but that would be certainly an extreme example of the highest level of relationship. And certainly, that could also mean on a much lower level, but still a very significant level, a chavrusa. Or for that matter, just someone who you're with in the community, who maybe perhaps you came together with to build a community, to build a shul. It's not just that he or she is really good at these things and they play that role on the VOD or in the community and another person's really good at those things. It's not only that we enjoy having Shabbos lunch together and we enjoy each other's company, we actually like each other, but the very fact that we came together to for a higher purpose than both of our selfish needs. But to build something, to have a value, so that is something, says the Rambam, that's the highest level of friendship and relationship that a person can have. Whether it's a chavrusa, whether it's a community member, it could be so many different examples of it. And certainly, as I say, I hope it means husband and wives, in which we come together to have a higher level. And this is something, again, it's not only something that enriches our life on an emotional level, but on a deeply religious level, says the Rambam, these are the types of relationships that we should be investing the most in. Because these are the relationships which not only are going to benefit us, level one, not only going to make us happy and give us emotional fulfillment, level two, but they are the ones that are going to add the most meaning to our lives in the deepest sense. I want to conclude with just one final source, and that is a story, so to speak, that relates to Avort, which you can tell my wife, I quoted something completely new in tonight's year, because I've never actually shared this particular idea or this story necessarily, and that is an insight that I found in the name of the Ger Rebbe, not the current one, not even the current split off one, but the father of the current split off one, or the previous Ger Rebbe, the Pinchas Menachem, the Pnei Menachem, who I actually had a chance to meet once or twice in my life in my younger years. And he is discussing a very interesting Gemara. Some of you may remember, just over Yontif, I have met a few different people who said, I know you, because I watched you on Tisha B'Av. Literally, just as Yontif, it happened to two or three different people. So one of the years on Tisha B'Av, when I was speaking, I discussed a Gemara Masechta Machlos, which tells us that if a person kills by accident, a Rotzeach B'Shogeg, not only do they have to go to the Ir Miklat, do they have to go into Golus for who knows how many years, but their Rebbe has to go also. Someone who has to go to Golus, says the Sugya and Makos, Taf Yura Mar Aleph, HaTalmid Shigola Magalin Rabo Imo. So at the time on Tisha B'Av, I spoke, what a striking statement of Chazal, about the role of Rebbeim. And how important it is. A person can't live. A pasuk that's quoted to prove that is, uses the Lashon of Achai. Kol Midi De Tehavi Lechiyusa. A person should have the type of Rebbe that they can't live without. Therefore, how can I send you to Golus without your Rebbe? And therefore, we're Gola the Rebbe. That's very striking. There's a Rambam on that. But what I saw just recently, which is more striking, is the fact that the Pnei Menachem, the Ger Rebbe, asked the following question. He connected it to our sugya. He says, 1 second, if you're telling me based on that Gemara, when we send somebody into Golos to Ir Miklat, because anything they need for their life has to go with them, and apparently even a Rebbe is something you need for life, what do we learn in tonight's shir? Chavera Yosame, Rabosai. O Chavrusa, O Misusa. A Chavrusa is life. It's better to be dead than not to have a Chavrusa. So why don't we ask the Pnei Menachem have a din that the friends, that the Chavrusa of the Rotzeach B'Shogeg also has to go into Golus? So listen to the Loshon. I don't know if he said it in Hebrew, he said it in Yiddish, but the way it was recorded, which is in Hebrew, is as follows. He said, he gave two answers. Second answer is a little bit less, more technical, a little less interesting. But his first answer is v'tirates. What did the Ger Rebbe say? Shechaver tzorech legalos me'atzmo v'ein tzorech letzavos alav v'chavero shetzorech letzavoso eino chaver. Of course a friend has to go into Golus. How could they let you go by yourself? We don't need a drusha for that. A friend who needs a drusha is not a friend. That's a striking, unbelievable source. So, the good news for all of us is there's no Ari Miklitz anymore. But I know you're right, start thinking, would she go with me? Would he go with me? Even if I asked, let alone if I didn't. But that could be a new barometer to start thinking about, you know, who really are your close friends. I'll give you a hint. If they're only a friend on Facebook, they wouldn't go with you. Okay, so we're at least talking about actual human relationships. Right, but the truth is they're probably, and it's a really important lesson, not to dismiss the broader people that we have as friendships. It's important to have broader social circles, and I have no problem with calling them friends. But it's important to be honest with ourselves and to realize that if we're lucky, each of us only has a few good friends. Some people aren't even zocha to that. But if we're lucky, we each have a few, starting with our spouse, and then maybe a few others. A friend on that level that wouldn't even need to be told, they would just show up and be there for you. That's the type of friend, says the Pnei Menachem, the Ger Rebbe, that religiously is what is necessary in life. And that leads to, and with this we'll conclude, maybe the most famous Hasidic story about friendship. That is the story of Rav Moshe Leib Sassover, one of the great early tzaddikim of Hasidus, who used to say that I learned the importance of the definition of friendship from two non-Jewish peasants, two Russian peasants. He described how he was once traveling and he came to, what is it called in Yiddish, the Kretschmer, he came to the little town inn, which at least a third of all Hasidic stories begin that way. The rabbis seem to always have been traveling and they're always stopping off at various inns, and evidently it wasn't controversial even for the rabbi to sit at the bar, because that's also how the next part of all these stories go. He said, I was sitting at the bar and I was listening to these two drunken Polish peasants talking to each other. And as they were draining their last drops from the bottle of the vodka, so one of them said to his friend, do you love me? Are you really my friend? The other person almost got insulted. What do you mean, do I love you? Of course I love you. Am I your friend? Of course I'm your friend. What are you talking about? I'm your best friend. So he said to him, okay, in that case, can you tell me, what do I need? In what ways am I in pain? So the person said to him, I don't know. How am I supposed to know? If you tell me what you need, I'm happy to help. I'm your best friend. I'd be there for you. So the first person responded, how can you say that you're my friend if you don't know what I need? If you don't know why I'm in pain? That story really, really, very dramatically illustrates the same principle that the Garebi was using to explain the Gemara. And again, I think if we're lucky, and hopefully we are, we've all experienced this, right? Even if you dated and courted your spouse in a more modern context, you actually went out maybe a few months or who knows how long, right? Not one of the couples who just kind of meet at the wedding. But even then, how well do you really know a person? Right? The answer is, you know, hopefully well enough to have made the right decision. But you don't really know the person. And over the years and years and years, hopefully, however, many, many years of marriage, you get to know that person much, much, much better. And the truth is, on some level, the barometer is at some point, a person should be able to know on their own, this is what my husband wants, this is what my husband likes, this is what my wife likes, my wife doesn't like. Now, again, for sure the men will get it wrong a lot. Women less so. Okay, but we're husbands. But nevertheless, if you never get it right, if you're never even thinking without first being told, so then there is a certain chisaro. Because marriage certainly should first be friendship. It should be much more than that, but it starts off as a friendship. At its core, it has to be. And certainly every friendship that we have, including the friends that we are growing religiously together, our community. So the connection that we have to people is that we're thinking about each other. Right, Rav Stav, in the beginning of his shiur, in the first shiur that we had tonight, one of his insights towards the end of the shiur was about how we often make mistakes because we're thinking about everything from our perspective and not from Hashem's perspective. So I think it's also true when it comes to human relationships and friendships. If we're only thinking about it from our perspective, we're much less likely, whether it's our friends or our spouses, to be thinking about what they need, let alone know what they need. But to the extent that we are thinking about other people, what do they need? What would be good for him? What would be good for her? On an emotional level, on a physical level, and yes, on a religious, on a spiritual level. So then, hopefully, as our own homes, our own families, as the mini mikdash, and then branching out to the mikdash ma'at and the broader community that we're all a part of, hopefully we're not only enjoying each other's company, hopefully we don't only like to be together with each other, not only do we have practical benefits from being with each other, but hopefully we have that highest level of the Rambam's friendship in which we're coming together for a purpose greater than ourselves, of not only raising a family together in Eretz Yisrael, and hopefully each of us on our own level, with the help of our spouse and our friends, of getting closer and closer to Hashem. So, you know, it's really, really hard. Life is hard, Rav Stav was talking about that, and religiosity and being an Eved Hashem and learning, these things are all hard. But they're impossible alone. They're doable together. They're doable in the context of a good marriage and a good family, and they're definitely doable in the context of a good shul, or a good community, and good neighbor, and good friendship. And we see that, again, whatever the differences of the contemporary situation in which we find ourselves, or the modern world, which are plenty, but more or less, the things stay the same, even as they change. And Chazal, or the various Mefarshim that we discussed tonight, I think, provide really, I think, relevant and profound insights, and really a roadmap for us to view all of those relationships, our most intense, in the people who we share a roof with, and beyond, to really see not only the emotional and practical benefits that we can hopefully give each other, but the way we can each hopefully serve each other and benefit each other and grow together as all of us try to come closer to Hashem. Okay, Yishkoach, everyone. Thank you for coming. And thank